Yes, Honest Actors is back with brand new episodes every Friday. To help me continue releasing new episodes without a sponsor, or to say thanks for your favourite old ones, click the support link in the episode description. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. It's a one-off, feeling generous, good deed for the day sort of thing. Think of it as bumping into me and buying me a drink. To find out more, click the support link. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Yeah, mine's a large red.
I hate those guys.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And you know what? I look at people and I think, if they can do it, I can do it. When I went to the doctors at 18 and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic, I think he thought I was far too young. So I was 18. I'd written my mum a note. She already knew about the bottles of vodka that I'd tried to hide. She'd mentioned it to me, but she was so, like, I couldn't tell her when I started my period because it was so uncomfortable talking to her. I'd grown up knowing my auntie had committed suicide, but I couldn't ask why. So when I'm feeling a bit shit, how do I say to my mum I'm feeling a bit shit?
That was an extract from Seagull, written from verbatim and originally performed by Helen Vine, directed by Fiona McAlpine. It's part of a series called Talking Taboos, monologues around similar themes, and I will be talking to Helen, the woman behind it all, in a little bit. Before that, though, I should acknowledge that this is, I suppose, in a way, after a fashion, the Honest Actors podcast, and I am most definitely, without question, Jonathan Harden. Jonathan Harden also needs to apologise in the third person or otherwise for not supplying the final interview of the Honest Actors series 3, it was. As promised, I think about 8 or 9 months ago, I told you that a final interview would be making its way to the feed within a few weeks, and it did not come. It has not come, but it will be coming at some point in the future. I'm not willing to commit anything beyond that, because I've let you down once before. In my defence, my life has changed quite a lot since then, and I may explain that further when that interview eventually does go out. But it is recorded, it is not edited, and that is what's holding it up. I just need to get to sit down and get stuck in. But I will do it as soon as I can. Talking taboos then. Talking taboos, the full range of, the full, I guess, suite of monologues is available at talkingtaboos.co.uk. That's talkingtaboos.co.uk. It's being launched right as this podcast is appearing on the feed in Equity in London. And you can also hear a full version of Seagull, the monologue from which you just heard an extract, and another complete monologue entitled Access, performed by yours truly, on this very podcast feed. So if you enjoyed that extract, and if you listened to the interview with Helen and you think you'd like to hear more, you need do nothing but sit here and listen, and those two full monologues will be coming into your ear holes. Enough of that for now, though. Here it is, the interview with Helen Vine. Enjoy.
So, this is slightly weird because I don't do a lot of interviews about things. In fact, I haven't ever done an interview about a thing. And so I'm going to go straight in and risk sounding a bit like Alan Partridge and say, what's the big idea? What are we talking about? What's the project?
So the project is called Talking Taboos, which actually is funny because the amount of times I've said it that people have said, oh, talking taboos, as in talking to alcohol, that's clever. and I'm thinking, yeah, actually, alcohol is a massive part of this project, actually. But that's not what I, that's not it at all.
So it's talking
taboos.
Taboos, right?
Yeah.
I'm acting like I don't know this.
Yeah, that's funny.
I should declare when I ask you what the project is. I do know what the project is. This isn't some random chat where I've been, blackmailed into having a conversation with an actor because they have some dirt on me. Like, I am actually a part of this. So a few months ago, I went over to lovely Norwich for the first time in my life. If you haven't been to Norwich, by the way, and this is not with any hint of, irony or anything, go and visit Norwich. It's belter. It's like probably the best. So I went to Norwich and stayed with Helen, and we recorded a monologue for this project. So it's a collection of monologues, right? But it's not just straightforward. Like, you haven't just asked playwrights to write monologues. What's the process by which you got these monologues together?
So thinking about it from the beginning, I really wanted to tell people stories, which, I mean, I know is like a massive part of just what we do as artists, and storytelling is just huge. But I guess it was more like that raw kind of storytelling you get in a situation where someone has just opened up to you massively and said some stuff about their life that is really heartbreaking to either hear or for them to say, or both. And I find that really kind of, sometimes I sit there and listen to people telling these stories and think, oh God, these need to be heard because they're not heard. Not in that way kind of thing. And it all came from a place, a really personal place for me, that was about addiction. So I have a loved one that is an addict, and I really wanted to tell the story of an addict, because I met quite a few addicts when I went to visit my loved one in rehab, and I had this huge kind of compassion for what they have to go through and how it's just this lifelong disease. And I then had some kind of therapy through something called Al-Anon, which I discovered, which is amazing. It's just free fellowship where people in the room are all, they all have a family member who has a problem with alcohol, or is an addict, or both. And it's a way to connect and to find a recovery process for yourself as a family member, or anyone that you know. It could be a friend even. So I suddenly felt this urge to kind of create something, use my skills as an artist, an actress, and try and tell stories that are taboo in society. And that came from the fact that I felt like it was kind of shameful to talk about what really is happening with my addict. I wanted to protect them, and I kind of could see in society that it is one of those things that we don't really want to know about, maybe, or if we do, it's dark and it's scary, and it's just an absolutely devastating disease, addiction.
So that was your kind of personal, that's your personal connection to it, in that a lot of people, a lot of creative people have gone through something traumatic, both at a remove of one and also your own personal trauma related to that, right? Mm. And your instinct has been, after I guess a time of being able to process something, to go, what can I do with this? Not just to help process it for me, but to help either illuminate a circumstance that isn't, you feel isn't being discussed enough, or in this case is taboo, and to help other people open up about similar things that are going on with them. So if that's the starting point, then how does it come to be, that you're now sitting looking back on, is it six monologues?
It's five.
Five, looking back on five monologues, mm-hmm. that you've been through a development process, et cetera, with, and have turned that process, seen it to its conclusion. It's going to launch. In fact, it is launching as this is being released on the iTunes. So it is now launched in a weird kind of bending of the structures of time, and is available for people to listen to online. Like, what is the, what's this stage between the, how did you come to decide it's not just about my loved one's addiction and my relation to that, it's about something bigger? Like, what was the process and how did you go from that to a place where you had some monologues to record?
So I kind of began to think about other taboos in society, either again through personal experience or through just life experience, meeting people and recognising things about them. And I kind of, I came up with just endless amounts, really, just writing down things that could be taboo. I mean, the list is endless. And but then I thought, okay, this is going to be, I need to structure this into some sort of pilot series, if I'm going to put like a creative spin on it. And I went for the idea of radio because I thought I really want that intimacy of the voice and the listener. I don't necessarily want it to be something that you go to see in a theatre, that you've kind of decided, oh, I'm going to go and see that. I'm going to buy my ticket for this because I'm interested. I kind of wanted that. I don't know. I guess I pictured someone like me driving the car, like putting on the radio, hearing a voice and a story that like hits you. And then just that happening's just out of chance, and actually it being pretty, having quite a profound reaction, and making you either massively connect or think, God, I know someone like that, and I need to, you know, find the emotional vocabulary to help them because that's what they need, and, you know, this conversation needs to be opened up. And then how you find kind of hope and recovery is kind of within these stories as well. So I kind of thought, okay, radio would be a good idea. Let's just go with five taboo topics for this.
So it's not taboos in the kind of sense of like, this isn't like, you know, men who marry their pets or, you know, people who like to dress up as babies.
Yeah.
This is like, this is taboos which are of a traumatic nature, I guess, for people. Is that what you mean? Like personal trauma?
Yeah, it's funny actually, yeah, because someone did say that to me, like, oh, I found a story that would work really well. It's like this man that collects shoes on a beach or something. And I was like, oh. And I thought, yeah, I mean, that would be, I want there to be humour in this as well.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
trauma absolutely comes from it, really, because of like my personal reason doing it. And yeah, just the fact that I wanted to kind of hit the really like, uncomfortable parts of things that happen to us, and actually things that are really common as well, though, that like, you know, so many people go through, and yet
so what,
we can't.
Are you able to say what that mean? I know you know what the five are, but is it the kind of thing you want to say, or do you want people to listen to them with kind of fresh ears and discover what they're about, or do you want to kind of give a sense of what the five that you've went for the pilot series are?
Yeah, I'll give a sense because it's probably then quite a good way to then, yeah, people might think, oh, okay,
I'll have
a listen. So we've got one about addiction from an addict's perspective, who's a young woman, and that they all have interconnecting themes, which is really interesting. I'll talk about in a minute. But then you've got one about grief from a young man. You've got one about infertility and IVF treatment and miscarriage, the journey of pregnancy, basically, in a young woman, and loss. And then you have one about alcoholism and addiction from the perspective of, like myself, kind of thing, a family member who has lived with a disease through his loved ones, and that's an older gentleman. And then there's one about domestic abuse that kind of covers psychological mainly, but as well as kind of verbal and physical, from a middle-aged woman. So yeah, those are the five. But yeah, like I say, when I interviewed people, I actually found it was mad because things just came up. Like, miscarriage was the kind of big part of this one story, and then this older man was talking about his alcoholic ex-wife and said, you know, she had all these miscarriages and looking back. So, yeah, I thought, oh, you know, this is, everything is connected. And so many themes came up in all of them that just sat quite well. And alcohol was actually quite present as well in a lot of them.
So I guess one of the things we haven't actually discussed to get here is that, and you've hinted at, is the process. So you talk about from a young man's perspective, this is an actual young man or the older man or the young woman. Mm. These are real people. So
yeah.
You went out and conducted interviews. You found people who were willing to talk and you conducted interviews with them. And then what happened? How did that process go?
Yeah, so I had an informal chat with these people and they were just very brave and open and honest and wanted to tell their story. So that was recorded and sent to professional writers who then I kind of gave them this brief of writing it from verbatim, so keeping it true to word as much as possible. But just dramatizing it for like the purpose of radio, and actually just kind of restructuring perhaps.
Lend some shape, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. But generally, they are just the true stories, and they've been protected and anonymized, and facts have been changed. But yeah, it's the words.
And their words are read by an actor.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's part of it as well. So listen, I guess there's two things kind of strike me with this, is that this, either by design or by accident, must have helped you to process some of the things that you'd started to kind of work through it all and on. And my question, if it was to begin, is did you set out to do this in a way to help you get through something of your own, or have you found retrospectively that it's helped you process something in a way that you didn't intend?
Yeah, I think maybe subconsciously, but yeah, because I feel like the catalyst was when the situation, my family situation, kind of hit crisis mode, and like the reality of this family disease and what was going on was just like so, so raw, so hard to deal with. And we were all kind of in it. And I think that was when, because I'd already had this idea roughly of what I could do, but I didn't really want to take that leap into kind of, I'm going to produce this whole project. I just wanted to continue trying to get work as an actress and just like think about writing about maybe my own experiences another time. But yeah, I think probably a life, there was a moment where everything just like kicked off, and I felt like, okay, there's a lot here that I can, that I'd like to say and use, and then meeting other people in my situation kind of opened that up, and I realized that actually so much is under the radar, even the support groups are under the radar. Mm-hmm. And
what about the contributors and the kind of owners of those stories? Have they heard the monologues back yet?
Yeah, most of them have.
And how has that? Is that, have they found it a difficult, therapeutic, you know, kind of all of the above?
Yeah, I mean, because this was the first time I've ever done this, I was worried that I've got nothing to compare it to, and I didn't have like someone kind of advising me of how it should be done and everything. I just trusted my kind of instincts and kind of worked with those people. So the story contributors, they're either kind of friends of mine or they became kind of good friends, and I wanted to build up a relationship with them so it wasn't just, hi, thanks for the story, bye, kind of thing. But they've all actually had very different types of reactions. I'm in the process now really of sitting with them and talking through, because they've been printed into a book, and kind of saying, do you want this book or not? You know, like, I don't want it to be too overwhelming. But actually one of the contributors said the other day that they actually really like having this record of that that time in their life, and it's really surreal for them to have it, but also it's actually a really healing kind of process for them as well, where they can just have that as a copy. And then the older man, so he's this guy in his 80s, and he's a beautiful person. I went to see him the other day, and he read his piece sitting on this armchair next to the fire. And I was just sat there like watching him for like half an hour whilst he read it so slowly, and I was thinking, oh God. But he cried a bit, but he said it was just amazing. He couldn't believe that his story was being told like this. He said, it's all true. I said, oh, yeah, that was the idea.
The point. Yeah.
And then he asked me to write his life memoirs.
Yep.
So, yeah, I might have a massive project on the go of this.
Like, got a spin-off.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, I mean, because I don't normally chat to people about projects as such, and I just jumped in there at the deep end and asked people, or asked you rather, what the project was. I guess I should maybe ask a little bit more about you and your own kind of process to get here. I mean, is that personal trauma that you've been through? I mean, I feel like you'd have a buzzer when somebody mentions therapy in this podcast, because it's such a constant in everyone's experience, or a lot of people's experience, it seems. You know, so many actors I've spoken to will refer to some sort of therapy over the course of their lives. Do you feel like you were drawn to acting for any reason that's to do with any of that stuff, or do you feel like any of that stuff has, even before this project, been, is it the kind of thing that you revisit when you're doing things? Is it something that you use, or do you try and distance yourself from those kind of painful things that have gone on in your own past? Are they part of your, what you do normally, or is this the first time that you've actually went and tried to do something with them in a really tangible way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I often think that, because I, like, in terms of like my approach to methods of acting, I'm quite open and flexible to each production I'm involved in. I kind of decide with the director or with the other people around me how to approach it. I'm not kind of, yeah, I don't like to touch my own emotions. I like to always just focus on the character. So I think because of stuff that I have been through, and as a child, even, I remember, I mean, I came from a broken home, and like a lot of people, and I remember just little moments where I'd be kind of, I'd take myself outside in the garden as a quite a little girl and just kind of create a whole world there where I was this kind of in a state of trauma, and I'd cry, or I'd make up a poem, or I'd sing or something, and I'd imagine there was a camera there. And I think there's definite things that naturally come from some heartbreak when you're really little. That's how I found it, and I do that release of being in another world when you are acting and given a character, and like a character especially that has so much depth and emotion. And I think it's impossible not to draw on anything that you've really felt. But yeah, it's hard. Like some things you start completely from scratch and you don't kind of touch anything. And I've never actually done a piece about addiction. I did 4.4 It's Psychosis at drama school, and I took that to extremes. I remember people in the audience being like, oh my God, like you must have come close to this before, because that was so real. And I did think then, well, I'm glad it was real, because yeah, I guess I have. I guess subconsciously, I mean, at that point, I hadn't really addressed it myself. I hadn't really thought that addiction was like a part of my life, my family's life. But it was, and I knew exactly how that character was feeling. So yeah, it's hard.
Do you think acting's always had a, and this, I guess, this is more the kind of traditional honest actor's territory, do you think being an actor has had a generally positive impact upon your mental health? Because I know some people you know, a lot of people find, you know, that working is incredibly therapeutic and working those things through and using those things either by intention or, you know, by accident or consciously or subconsciously is nice. But I guess the reason why I'm asking the question is because I know the converse is true of not working, you know, that acting actually can be an emotional drain in itself, or the lack of acting work or the lack of opportunity or whatever it is that we go through. Do you feel that, you know, on balance, acting has had a positive impact on where you are with all that, or if it's still something that contributes to those stresses and traumas?
Yeah, definitely both. I mean, I've been in the industry now for 5 years, which I guess isn't that long in the grand scheme of things. It feels like a long time. And I still massively, massively struggle with being out of work and all the same things that everyone speaks about with your podcast. That it's just, yeah, I find it really hard to cope when I don't know that I'm going to get another job and if I'm ever going to get to a place where I feel successful or I feel, happy in what I'm doing 100% kind of thing. However, when I'm in work, I am happy. And I also, it definitely helps because I guess I'm naturally quite an open person. And that's a big reason why this project really works hand in hand with me as a person, because it's all about opening up conversation about mental health, and I really want kind of every environment to be that open. So I mean, obviously in an ideal world where we don't judge each other, and the more you're kind of, the more you put yourself in that vulnerable state when you're an actor, physically, emotionally, verbally, when you're just like in a rehearsal room, I think that helps me to develop as a person 100%. Like I feel I'm more and more kind of sure of myself the more I kind of put myself on the line and take those like risks with work as well as in my personal life.
It is fair to say I spent, I don't know how much, like 24, like 36 hours probably in your company, less. And I think I said when I left that I felt like I'd known you and Bill my entire life, because we'd had so many conversations about so many deeply personal things.
Yeah.
And that must be part of what you're talking about, is that and I'm like that as well, that tendency to just want to talk things over.
Yeah.
And I guess that's made you more acutely aware of what's taboo, because I guess some people when you start to do that are like, hold on, you know, we barely know each other, or I don't want to talk about this, or I don't quite know what to say, or any of that stuff. So I guess that is probably a lot of where the project has come from, as you say, is your natural tendency to want to talk about things that are difficult or that are painful, or to share and also to listen to see what other people have to say in return. So I can totally understand that. I guess to kind of take it somewhere else, this is a way of you making work for yourself, right? So it's not as cynically done, don't get me wrong. It's that you know, it's a way of keeping yourself occupied, is another way of putting this. So whilst you wait for the phone to ring or the emails to ping or whatever it is, you've come up with this idea, you've got funding for it from the Arts Council, and you've been able to not only employ yourself but employ other people. Do you think, how important has that been for you? Is that the first time you've made something yourself?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And I was really reticent to go down that route, to be honest. I remember sitting in...
Why?
Well, so at drama school, they said to us a few times, like, you know, you really should consider making your own work, because it's such a good way just to, yeah, you're not waiting around and get a group of mates together, take something to the fringe. Whatever. And I used to sit there and think, nah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want... nothing will come of it, or, you know, I want to just go out as Helen and just be employed and be an actor. I don't want to have to have a producer head on or a director head on and be out of depth or out of money. And I even remember, Noel Clarke, the actor, and writer and director, he went to my drama school at LSDA, and he came in and gave us a really inspirational talk. And even then, because he said, like, you know, how he spent 2 years, I spent 2 years just in my living room, just typing away, like, I had no idea if anything would come from it. And I sat there again thinking, oh God, I'm not doing that. I can't bring myself to just sit there and type away. And then what if nothing comes from it, I'm broke and I'm depressed. Like, I just don't want to put myself on doing that. And I mean, I do love collaborating with people, but I guess as well, I've never like kind of had like a moment of, yeah, let's create this. Maybe I'm just cynical or just think the worst case scenario is going to be that no one's going to want to watch it or hear it or, I need to kind of establish myself. But then now, in retrospect, I can understand.
You're wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong. Yeah. I guess it is that fear and also the amount of work. I mean, yeah, like I have worked on this so hard.
If you were saying to someone else, as you are, there are people listening, like what would you say that Noel didn't say to try and get people to try it out?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was really...
Or is it just one of those things? It's like, you know, whenever your parents tell you things when you're younger and you're like, nah, you don't know what it's like. And then like, I find myself doing this constantly. Yeah. Like I characterized the last 2 years as constantly finding out that my dad was right about everything. But like, you know, is it just one of those things at a stage that you have to go through in order to discover that you were wrong? Or
yeah, I think
is there something you wish you'd known that might have convinced you to do it sooner?
Yeah, I think it's self-confidence. I think when you're sitting there, like about to plunge into the unknown industry as a complete unknown, and someone is telling you that they started like you and look where they are, but I immediately think, yeah, but because he's so talented, he got there and that won't be me. Like I won't be able to do that. So I need to find a different route kind of thing. I haven't got the skills to where, like making your own work, you have to have a lot of skills. And I guess I didn't think I had them. But actually, to be honest though, I think this all happened at the right time because by the time I started on this project, I had been in the industry a while to kind of know the structure of like, I knew all about equity and how to treat your actors, how to treat your team. And creatively, I had more confidence in kind of telling people what I really wanted from them and working with people, not feeling intimidated by them or kind of, yeah, just I wouldn't have been able to do it straight out of drama school anyway, because I didn't have the tool set. And it has been like a massive learning curve, and I have felt like I've kind of improvised a lot of it along the way, but I feel so much more kind of, I'm so glad I did it because yeah, now I've got something that I personally have created and it's got a future hopefully, and that you can make your own work, and I still financially am not on the streets. I've gotten by and I have managed to juggle other work with it as well, so it's not, yeah, all those things that you think, oh, it's not going to be doable. Actually, it is doable. You just have to take the leap, really.
Where can people listen? What's the all-important web address at the bottom of their screens?
It's www.talkingtaboos.co.uk. That's
Talking
the website.
Taboos, TABOOS.
Yes.
Listen, there's a couple more questions, which I think our conversation warrants in terms of closing this off, and they're honest actors questions of old. The first is, knowing that you are a big union head, and as I am also, although to my shame I've never got involved to the level that you have, I'd ask if you could change anything in our industry. If I appointed you, I'm not going to say queen because I'm going to go down the Republican route. If I appointed you president of the industry, not just of equity, for one day and you could change anything, what would you change?
Oh, I remember this question. It's so hard because there's so many things. And actually,
well, what's the top of your list? What would be, you know, if you were just starting to write a list now, and we'll qualify by saying the list will be much longer, and obviously sometimes the best things occur to you halfway through a list. What would be, start writing that list now and tell me what's at the top.
Well, I guess something that came up recently and something that I, that again kind of ties in with this really, is when people don't kind of, they're not honest about what's happened, so they're not helping other people. So basically, like, if they have a bad experience with a company or a director, or, and this stems from like the whole sexual harassment, which I've personally had experience of and campaigned against. But anything, you know, any kind of maltreatment within the industry, all the shit that happens, quite often people are scared because they don't want to name names, they don't want to wreck, they don't want to black mark their name. And it just perpetuates the problem, and they're kind of part of it in that way. And I understand it is really difficult to put yourself on the line, and it's not necessarily putting yourself on the line even. It's just kind of the more that we can kind of filter through the bad eggs from the good, and just kind of have that like mutual respect of this is how everyone should be treated. Because I'm still in that category of finding just any work that I can kind of thing. And I'm not kind of getting the best, kind of the top jobs. And I know that even in the top jobs, people have, of course, stories where they're treated badly anyway. But I see so many jobs go out, or I've been in jobs where I've even recently just worked with people that are just not professional in one way or another. And it's just, that just gets to me, because then I've heard people kind of say, oh, but I just didn't know, I didn't know who to tell. And it's like, you can tell Equity, and they will do something. They'll support you, and also tell each other, because you're protecting, you're warning other people, and we're all there for each other. And I think it's, yeah, that fear, because it's because we're inundated and we're all in competition, and we've just,
it is hard.
It's hard.
Because the telling each other thing is I guess a valid first step, but I guess, like, to use the kind of the Hitler of examples, the kind of, you know, the Weinstein thing was very much about a guy who everybody talked about, but nobody was willing, or everybody was too afraid, rather. And it's understandable, as you say, why people are too afraid to speak out against in that case in particular. But that there's something about telling other people only gets us so far, because there will be people who are just emerging in the industry who are more likely to be at the end of all kinds of abuse, abuses, I should say, be it not being paid right, or being, you know, sexually assaulted, or whatever it is, and that those people aren't party to conversations. And, you know, the industry's always, we always accuse the industry of being cliquey, and you know, that there's an in crowd and an out crowd, and there, in fact, there are hundreds of in crowds and hundreds of out crowds, and that these conversations between small groups are fine until the point where the groups are disconnected from each other. And that's where something like Equity becomes so important. And and you don't even have to, you know,
reveal yourself.
Exactly. If you don't want to take it to, you know, legal proceedings and stand up in court, or if it's not serious enough for that to happen, it's still worth having a conversation with a representative at Equity, because it may actually feed into a larger narrative of something they already know about someone. And it helps them to warrant spending money on it, in terms of, you know, seeing it through its natural conclusion.
Totally.
I think we all have a responsibility to, and I say this fully aware of the fact that it is incredibly difficult, and you've done it, so you know more than most, to stand up and say, put your head above the parapet and say, listen, this has happened. But that actually that is... We should, I guess what I should say is, rather than saying that, put the responsibility on those people, we should all thank and champion and support and protect the people who have done that. And if there are employers out there in a position of employing people, they should do their best to find work for those people who feel like they may have made themselves pariahs by speaking up. Because then, and only then, in the sense of, people have to feel like the industry will protect them rather than punish them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think maybe we're still a while away from that, but that, yeah. but that that's probably one of the big changes that we can all do. Like, so there are people out listening going, well, I haven't witnessed anybody being abused in any way, but actually what we all can do is be much more protective and supportive of those who have been and who have stood up and you know, taken the mantle and spoken. So anyway, that feels like an aside. Next question, and one of the last, is me speaking about it feels like an aside, really. The next question is, it's not, are you in anything at the minute? We're nowhere near there yet. God, it's gone in my head now. It's so long since I've done these, Helen.
Isn't your one next? We're still waiting for your interview.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, my circumstances have changed, as you well know. So my time is at a premium. So it's like, it's finding the time to edit things is my issue. If you could offer yourself advice, and this, I guess I've already asked a version of this, but if you could go back 5 years and, you know, sit beside yourself in the foyer of your graduation show and have a quiet whisper in your own ear and say, Helen, prepare, I've got a word of advice, what would that word be? What kind of things might you say to yourself to help make the last 5 years pass more smoothly, pass less painfully, or perhaps more successfully, or whatever? What would be your advice to Helen 5 years ago?
I think probably that it's not the be all and end all, kind of, because I went to uni before I went to drama school, and then I didn't get in for years, and then I did, and then I'd already kind of tested out some other career options. And then when I did go and I did finish and I went into the industry, I was literally like, this is all I have to, all I want to do. It's all I can do, all I want to do. And I think having that attitude is great, because I still have that attitude and 100% want to be in this industry for life. But that pressure that, I mean, and lots of people relate to this, I'm sure, it's just that pressure you put on yourself then, that that your whole life revolves around that kind of success. And actually, life is just so, like, multicoloured. You've just got so many other things that can give you satisfaction and enjoyment, and you have no idea what's around the corner and who you're going to meet and the kind of people that you're interact with. And it doesn't have to all revolve around, you making yourself successful as an actor. And just take it easy, take the time, because I've like now kind of realized I can do other things in my life, I can then just wait and see and keep chipping away at my work, but hopefully it will just add up in time.
I would ask if you're in anything at the minute, but I think more importantly than that, I should say that one thing you are in at the minute is one of the two monologues that we're putting out. Are we putting two or are we putting five?
Two.
So yeah. One of the two monologues that is now alongside this, so if people are listening and they would like to hear more of this, then they can, by doing very little but waiting for them to queue up and play. But that's one thing that you're in. And because I started off with a bit of a Partridge straight in at the deep end, I'll finish one. It's been nice talking to you, Helen Vide. See what I did there? It's
no,
because
it
Talking Taboo is the name of the project. And then what I've done is I've went talking to, talking to you. So
that's genius.
You know, and people, and the amazing thing is no one's offered me any presenting work off the back of this podcast. I can't work on it for the life of me. Like, surely BBC Breakfast, if Charlie State is the standard by which they're judging themselves, surely I should be in BBC Breakfast with cheese like that. Come on. Anyway,
definitely.
Listen, it has been lovely talking to you. I'm gonna keep
that's
on
what
pushing
you can
that.
Title the episode as
Talking to You.
Yeah.
Helen Vide. Aha! I mean, I can't resist. Thank you very much.
Thank you as well. Really appreciate we're all good. Your time.
So listen, you don't appreciate my time. That's it, right? We're done.
So as I said at the top of this, there are two full monologues available on this feed. One is Seagull, performed by Helen Vine. The other is Axis, performed by Jonathan Harden, who is, he never heard of him, but, you know, you can judge him for yourself. They're right here on that feed right now. The full Talking to Booze monologues are available at talkingtobooze.co.uk. And they are great. I think they're brilliant. They're all written from verbatim. And they're all very different, but obviously thematically linked. So please do go and check that out. That's all from me. Thanks for listening. And like I said before, I'm not going to promise when. I've let you down once. But there will be a final installment of the Honest Actors podcast to round off the whole adventure. It's coming your way. Until then, thanks for listening as ever. Be good to yourselves and each other.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.